Today on the AF Podcast, I'm bringing out the 2020 State of the Raptors address. I invite Randall Walter, head coach of Team Breakdown's AAU basketball program, as well as South Sharaf family member Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, as we discuss the first half of the Raptors season. We discuss the evolution of Pascal Siakam, the genius of Masai Ujiri, as well as Nick Nurse. If we believe Masai will stay in Toronto long term, our expectations for the second half of the season, how far we think the Raps will go, and a whole lot more. Listen, rate, review, and subscribe to all of the shows, to all of my shows. And you can listen to them wherever you listen to podcasts, specifically Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, as well as Spotify. It's just some of the places where you can listen to all of my shows from South Sharaf Radio. Please give it the 5-star rating that these episodes so richly deserves. Or give it the thumbs up or whatever represents the highest form of compliments on your podcast player. I need all of it. All of it. It's not a joke. And if you want to double back and catch up on all the podcast shows I've done, make sure you head over to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. I'm going to hyperlink the previous State of the Raptors address episodes to this one if you're checking this out on my website posts. This podcast was originally recorded on February the 7th. Before the Raptors added more wins to their now historic 15-game win streak. And this is also before Masai traveled to Africa with Justin Trudeau for the African Union Summit. Damn, this guy's doing big things, man. Jeez. It's the AF Podcast with Kyle C on South Shore AF Radio. We the North.
Welcome to the AF Podcast with Kyle C on South Shore AF Radio.
Welcome to the AV Podcast. My first guest is the head coach of Team Breakdown's AAU basketball program. He's currently on a road trip in the United States right now as we speak. And as far as we know, there's a deliberation for it. We're going to know probably the next week or so. But he just might be officially the CEO of Team Lightskin. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Randall Walter to the show. How you doing, sir?
Hold on, when was I relegated to CEO?
When
did that all change?
You've been moving up
I'm not
the ladder.
A business man, I'm the business.
You've been moving up the ladder. You've been moving up the ladder. You were a manager. You were a director.
Oh,
you were vice president.
Oh,
You were COO. Now you're about to find out if you're gonna be CEO. I'm proud of you, man. I'm freaking so proud of you. All this hard work, man. All this light-skinned hard work. It just made it a reality. I'm so proud of it. I love it. I love it so much.
It's all that Fred VanVleet work.
And my next guest is also a South Shore family member. He's the commissioner now of 81 fantasy leagues across the four major sports. We're using 81 just to represent Kobe Bryant there.
That's fair. That's cool.
Yes, that's right. Please welcome Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, to the show.
Yes, how you doing? Yes. I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yes, no doubt. We're right back at it. This is the fourth, man, I can't believe it's the fourth annual State of the Raptors address, man. It's been going on for four years. It's crazy.
4 years strong.
It's crazy.
4 years of Randall's great predictions of what the Raptors.
Yeah, unfold. I don't know about that.
yeah, he predicted the championship.
call me Randall Dawkins.
He even predicted the four bounce shot against Philly at Game 7. He predicted that too. It's an amazing.
Well, I said you're like it was gonna be three, but I can't get them all right.
You're like the genie from Aladdin. I swear.
Like Will Smith. Like him. Shout out.
Bel Air Academy.
All right, so the Raptors are off to their best start in franchise history. Hopefully it'll be 38 and 14 as of this recording. They're playing right now against the Indiana Pacers in a back-to-back game. They're fifth overall in three-point field goals made. Third in three-point percentage, seventh in free throws, second in defensive rating, 12th in offensive rating, and they're in the top 10 in a whole bunch of other stats. Now, we all had our expectations of how they would do this season. But with that said, how surprised are you guys that the Raptors, you know, considering their title defense this year, like going into the season, did you see this coming? Be honest.
No. But I did see them being a top three team in the Eastern Conference.
Okay.
I definitely saw that.
Yeah, I think, I think the three of us did. But yeah, go on.
You know, I definitely, you know, but I didn't see to this level of play happening. Not a chance. I didn't see like the bench playing to this level. I didn't see guys like Terrence Davis coming in, Rondae Hollis, Jefferson, like those type of, like, you know, even Boucher playing at this level. I did not see it. So I'm kind of surprised, but not surprised. But I did expect them, though, to contend in the East for sure.
Okay. And what about you, Randall?
Well, I got to make this public service announcement right now, because I got to tell y'all, man, like, I was not, and you guys know, I'm saying this on record, I was not a big Nick Nurse fan.
You jacking one of my questions, actually, but go on.
First half of the season. Y'all know this. Y'all know I was.
Yeah.
But I, as soon as the playoffs come around, he pulled that shit out the bag. And I'm going to tell y'all right now, like, I'm bought into Nick Nurse, man. Like, that man's a genius. Like, he's a certified genius. Like, coach of the year, deserves it all. I eat my words, just like I'm not a big fan of small point guards, and I eat my words with Fred VanVleet. You know, like, hey, they've proven haters wrong, man. And I can never hate on my Raps again. I can never hate on and my Raps again. So all I got to say is, am I surprised that they're doing this? Not surprised, but I didn't expect it. But at the same token, I did think they're going to have a good season. I think I said that on the preview. Yeah. I thought, you know, the analysts were totally wrong, because I think we all said this on one of the podcasts, when Kawhi was out, they were rolling. And what's really impressive is the next man stepping up. I mean, yeah. The development system the Raptors have is by far the best in the league.
Yeah.
And with Nurse at the helm, I never thought Casey was a bad coach, but it's night and day. It's night and day. I don't know if they're going to sustain this level of play right now, but I think I'm just going to enjoy it while it lasts.
You know what's crazy, Calvin, is that every NBA analyst had the Raptors 6th, 7th, 8th.
Oh, my God.
Seed.
Yeah.
That's what. Like,
some had them, Jules, some had them, some of them had them not even making the playoffs.
Yeah.
Some of them had them a lottery team.
I thought that was despicable, to be honest with you.
Oh, man. Because it was bad.
And what's scary is, you know, these guys are getting, and some of these guys are NBA players. They're watching games all the time, or so they claim. You know, they're getting paid a lot of money to analyze these games and analyze these teams, especially at the beginning of the season. And it's kind of like further proof that they don't really, like, even though they watch a lot of basketball, they watch north of the border, they don't really watch a lot of basketball north of the border. I mean, they probably paid more attention this year because it was Kawhi that was playing and the impact that he was having. But, I mean, you know, they lose Danny Green, they lose Kawhi, of course. And these guys had them, like completely dead. They had them as, like, you know, maybe a 35-win team at most in some cases. Listen, it was terrible. It was terrible.
But you know what? What's also funny? It pretty much continued from the championship series. Like, remember, like, when they were out with, like, they lost Clay, and they lost, like, whatever, and Vegas still had Golden State to win in 5. Then Stephen A. Smith, and these guys still had them winning in 5. Like, it just started from then, and it still continues in the off season, right into the beginning of this season. Yep. The analysts have no respect for the Raps. So
yeah, it's pretty bad.
But they're defying the odds, man. Let's be honest, they're defying the odds. So do you really? Like, for us, we see them play, like, day in, day out. But do you really kind of fault them for looking at them like that? I don't, because, like, does anyone think the Raps now are going to win a championship? No, but people are now thinking that they may be able to make a run back to the finals. I mean, that's, at least they're giving respect to respect is due, because they're showing out. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't think the Raps, you didn't think the Raps were going to make it, like, have an impact, like, this quick in this dynamic.
No.
But the fact that they're doing it right now.
They have a better record right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, at this point in the season than they did last year. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I didn't see that. I thought they were going to be a top three team. You know, I thought they were going to be behind Milwaukee, which we were right about, and Philly, which we were totally wrong about. I don't know what the hell's going on with Philly over there right now. That's a whole other story. That might be a whole other podcast. But I told you this, Randall, when we did the preview, that I felt like they kind of had like that 94 Chicago Bulls vibe to them. And if people who aren't familiar, that 93-94 Bulls team, that was the first. That was a year after Jordan retired, and everybody had them pretty much written off because he retired. That's the first time he retired, and they ended up winning 55 games. They took the Knicks to 7. They almost won that series and almost could have actually went back to the finals if they didn't lose to the Knicks. But to me, they kind of had that vibe to them because, you know, especially when you're watching some of the pregame, not pregame, sorry, some of the interviews from like the preseason and stuff. The way they were talking and the way they were carrying themselves, everybody seemed to immediately have this chip on their shoulder, you know, right off from jump. And I was like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, how they're going to, you know, maintain health-wise and stuff. And I think that's probably the biggest shocker, that they're maintaining this record, losing all the guys that have been losing this season, all the manpower and stuff. It's crazy. Like, that, I think, is amazing, the fact that they're having this record and they're losing guys left and right, and they're just still you know, taking teams to task.
Unbelievable.
I think it's crazy.
No Kawhi plus all these injuries equal to a better record this year than last year.
Hold on. You guys are forgetting the main ingredient to this, though. You got to have a little spice, baby. Spicy. Did we ever think that Spicy P, well, I hate that name, but whatever, Pascal Siakam, would come out and really have a season like this? This man is playing possessed. I didn't see it. I liked his when they drafted him. We were all like, "Who the hell is he?"
Yeah.
When he started to play his rookie year, I was like, "Hey, he's not bad." Right? Him and Poto. I was like, at first I was like, "If you're on Poto," but then I saw both of them play. I'm like, "Hey, you know what? Those are two good sound corner pieces." Did I think that Siakam would turn out to be what he is? Hell no. Neither did he. But I'll tell you, man, that's the difference right now, because, you know, he's just taking that new face of the franchise and just turning it to another level, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you knew he was going to be an all-star like this year. Like, the way he was trending last year, you're like, okay, he's going to be an all-star, playing the all-star game this year for sure, like this following season. Just like how I feel like next year that's going to be Van Vliet. But I felt like he was going to be an all-star. Did I see him being either voted on as a all-star starter? No, you know, I didn't see that coming. But it's funny, like, so I guess this leads to my next question here, since we're talking about Siakam. What's been the most impressive thing you've seen from Pascal Siakam this season? Any one of you guys can start.
The most impressive thing,
mm-hmm.
I guess for me is the consistency. You know, like, I think he always had that talent. You know, you saw him develop last year and the year before, but he was able to hit his threes and miss threes. And, you know, sometimes when he shot the ball, I didn't feel as confident that it was going to go in. Mm-hmm. But this year, I think game in and out, every time he's open or he takes that corner three, I felt confident that it was going in. So for me, the most sort of shocking thing is, again, that consistency game in and game out that he has. I didn't think that he'll get to that point so soon in his career, but he's consistent every game for the most part, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about you, Randall?
Yeah, you know, I got a load on that. I think consistency is key. You know, and the thing that really impressed me is last year we all thought he had a breakout season because, you know, Kawhi was on the team and kind of some of the attention was off Pascal, so the old kind of leverage him to have a better season.
Mm.
And now that Kawhi is gone, and we all were like, you know, what's going to end up happening is, you know, now all the attention is going to be on him. He's not going to perform in the spotlight. But like Jules said, the opposite happened, where he's kind of taking the bull by the horns and he's really showing out day in, day out, consistently being the marquee player with game plans against him to stop him. And he has that type of game that it's hard to stop because he's always had a great motor. And what always impressed me is how he runs in transition. This transition game, yeah. Kind of, it's like, I won't say transcendent, but it's the only other player I could see like in modern age that runs like him is really like in this era, Greek Freak. Right? Like they have almost like, I won't say mirroring games, but they're very freakish in that, in running those lanes, you know, getting out with the ball, pushing the ball.
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
You know, really causing defenders to you know, to stop him quick on the break, which is hard. We're picking up fouls deep in the zone, or dunking, or passing it back and getting alley-oops. And then what it causes, because he's so quick with his getting guys off the dribble, he worked on that bag. Now, like, he always had the inside game already from college. He kind of had, like, you know, a little bit of a floater. But now, like you say, he's able to get a shot off because now all defenders are like, man, I can't play this guy tight up because he's going to blow by me. So now he has that extra second to square up and kind of concentrate on that shot what he worked on. So I love what's happening, and I can't wait to see him kind of be more now of a playmaker. So I think that's where he needs to improve on. Him kind of, sometimes he can get a little erratic, and that's what I felt last year was missing in his game, where he would kind of turn over the ball. I think he's eliminating some of those turns, but I think the next step is to kind of get other players involved, you know, which he's getting better at, but he's not there yet.
Now, when you say transition, do you mean like him handling the ball in transition, or just him running and filling the lanes?
I think
filling the lanes, I think he's that's been his one skill from the time he got into the league. I thought he was amazing at running the floor, pretty much from his first or second year when he got in the league.
That was his forte, right? Remember Larry just throwing him those oops?
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like that type of game, it's. There's not many players that play the four that can run like a gazelle.
No, they can't stay with
him. The court.
They can't stay with him.
And he was running the lanes well, yeah. And now he's dribbling, like he's pushing the break off a rebound. Like he takes, as soon as he grabs that board, he's gone.
He's gone.
Right? And you can't. That's hard to stop.
I agree with that.
Especially with the NBA with long threes, you know, all these long rebounds, he's grabbing that board. So.
It's funny. I think he's. I still think he has another level or so to get to. Just agreeing with what you're saying in terms of making other players better. I'm unsure. Like how it's funny. Like he's one of those rare players who's been in the league for a little bit. Like he's been in the league at least 4 years, but he's a little older in age. Even though he's like 25, which is actually pretty. It's a pretty good age. But because of the late start that he's had in the game, he's going through those natural progressions of improvement. Like I just wonder if he's gonna catch up before, you know, catch up to all his talent and all those progressions before his prime, like his athletic prime ends. And I think the other question that, you know, I'll ask is how well he'll do, you know, having the responsibility of being that number one guy for the first time as a Raptor. But the good thing is he can already lean on his playoff experience, and having great games in the finals, that type of thing, is something you can certainly lean into. So I think like he's in a unique it's a unique situation. It's not something that you normally see. You know, a guy that started off late, you know, is a late bloomer, late to the game, but he's rapidly picking up all of these skills and talents for his size. Plus, physically, you know, he's abnormal from the average person his size, like the average big that's his size can't stay with him because he's just too fast. But it's just the way he picked up certain things in the game. It's like it's unique. It's such a unique thing. Sometimes I wonder if like Podol is like watching some of these Raptors games every night with like a tear in his eye, because you felt like when they both came into the league, they both had like they're both on a similar level. And since, you know, he's went to San Antonio, it's like one took off and one is like he's still good, but you know, it's like he's still at a certain point.
And that leads to the biggest part, too, of all this is the team culture and the team dynamics that allowed Siakam to flourish and grow. The veterans that they had, the winning culture. Look, and we saw Poeltl when he was with the Raptors. He had that same potential.
Yeah.
Exact same potential. He goes to San Antonio, known for a great organization to develop young guys, but maybe not in this day and age. But he totally falls off the boat. Like, he's not even starting, not even playing, mm-hmm. to the point where he was in Toronto. And we see Siakam elevating, continuing to elevate. And last but not least, we got to keep in mind, too, he's playing with, like, an all-star point guard and Lowry with Fred VanVleet.
And you got to add coaching to that, too, because, you know, with Casey being there, like, I don't know if Casey would have given him those reins to handle the ball. You know what I mean? Like, as almost like a point forward. Even last year, he was doing that last year, even with Kawhi being there. Yeah. Like, would Casey have given him those kind of responsibilities when he was there? We don't know. We'll never know. But based on the history of how he coached, I would say no. You know, like he would have stunted at a certain point.
I don't know.
I know you're going to defend him. I know you love Casey. I know. Go on. Sorry.
Yo, the one thing I get Casey is that Casey always, like, he played a little bit too much ISO. So if he saw the mismatch, he would let someone go to work on the mismatch. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all about if they have the skill to do it. And maybe he may not have experimented as much as Nurse. But, I mean, we don't know what was seen in behind the scenes at practice and in preseason. So, but the one thing I think that I want to mention that was intrigued me and that really helped with these guys, and not just them, but everybody, was the emergence of the 905. Without, like, the 905 really helped these guys to like, you have to remember, wasn't he the MVP of the 905 league? And remember, they won a chip playing in the 905. Like, they brought all these young guys together, the core, and that core showed out and won a chip. So I give, you know, I think a lot of that development started there. I don't think people realize how much, I was talking to Joel Anthony, and I don't think a lot of people realize how much, what's his name? That was coaching there. Sorry, my mind is blank.
Jemma?
Help me up. No, before Jemma.
Stackhouse?
Stackhouse. I don't think people realize how much Stackhouse was integral in helping development of these players. Like, just not just, like, you know, with their skill, but just mentally, how to prepare them to be in the league and play at the level they were. Like, they really, I think he had a big influence on them, so.
But going back to Calvin's point, going back to Nurse, look at the players that have developed though under him in that short time frame. Like, in this, like, Powell with Casey was, man, awful.
Doghouse.
And now I'm not saying it's because of Nurse that Powell is who he is today, but under Nurse, his confidence is now here. Remember those days when Valanciunas was under Casey's, like, time, like. Valanciunas was, like, playing 20 minutes, wasn't playing in the fourth. Mm-hmm. He wasn't getting that kind of experience under Casey. I don't know. I think Nurse has a lot to do with this, too, in terms of where Siakam is. Actually, in the beginning, in Nurse's first season, which is last year, right?
Yeah.
He started Siakam right off the bat. He started him.
Yeah.
Right? And when Casey was there, Siakam was, you know, coming off the bench and whatnot. So you got to give Nurse for, like, seeing the talents, utilizing them, and putting them into the right positions to grow and to learn while still winning.
And on top of that, giving him that point forward role in terms of just even bringing up the ball up the floor and initiating the offense, like, that gives you comfortability, you know what I mean? And gives you, like, you're already getting to some sort of a rhythm, you know what I mean? Like, right at the beginning, just by initiating the offense at times, you know what I mean? So for somebody like, in his position, somebody like Siakam, who was not normally used to handling the ball that way, I felt like that kind of speeds up your game a little bit, too, because it gets you thinking faster. You know what I mean? Because you have the responsibility of having the ball in your hand, like, to start off the offense. So I think that's huge for his development, too.
Siakam's ball handling is nice, man, for his size. Like, I'm looking at OG, and I want to see OG develop in that same pace and develop those same type of skills, but I'm not seeing it, right? And Siakam, he's like dribbling, shooting threes, running the floor, and I'm like, come on, OG, man.
I don't think OG has that. Anyway, I don't want to get in on OG right now. I promise I won't get on the Raptors.
Yes, I know, because you've had the issue with OG, too. But, you know, it's funny, because I always thought, I think I've told you this, Randall, I always thought when Kawhi was coming, I thought OG would be the one that would benefit the most, not Siakam. You know what I mean? I thought he was going to be the one that would make the leap beside Kawhi. I didn't think it would be Siakam.
I think we all thought he was good.
Just the natural build.
But I don't think he has the, you're right.
You know what, but OG has the physical capabilities to do like to be a Siakam.
Absolutely.
But he doesn't have what Rand was saying about Siakam's motor. He does not have the motor.
No.
And he doesn't have the mental capacity. Like that dog, that Lowry pit bull, like bringing in every night. Sometimes he just looks like he's just like in another world when he's on the floor. Like he's not even thinking the game. Like he's not thinking.
He has a similar, I won't say mindset, but he has a similar demeanor. And I would even say go as far as say he's like a poor man's version of when Kawhi came in the league.
I thought they had a similar path.
But Kawhi's he's a rare, like you can't, like you would never see another guy like Kawhi coming into the game like who doesn't have any emotion, doesn't have any. No, or at least who doesn't exhibit that kind of passion.
We're not even talking that. Like the skill set that Kawhi has now compared to when he came in, to what he came in with to the league is night and day. It's not even the same player. It's not even close to the same player. You know what I mean?
So what are you saying about OG in comparison then?
I'm saying that when he came from Indiana, I thought that like he had. I'm not saying I thought he was going to be Leonard. I just thought like he had the similar kind of talent and the
tangibles.
Like that Kawhi
what, mentally
did.
Or what like
physically.
I'm agreeing with you guys. I think physically he still has the abilities and talent to be an all-star. I think he's like 6'8", 200 he's like a power forward, small forward. He had the physical abilities and intangibles to be that player. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying he doesn't have the motor. And he doesn't have the mental capacity. He doesn't have that in him, That's all I'm saying. So when you were mentioning about Kawhi, and I'm like, yeah, Kawhi, I saw your point. I thought you were talking about how he doesn't have that dog mentality, like at least visibly. We all know he has it because we see it on the court. But like Kawhi is that robot. Like you won't see many players coming out of high school or college who don't show passion or show emotion or leadership. Or leadership to be that good. Usually you got to have all those things, right? To be that's what makes those elite athletes or NBA like superstars. Mm-hmm. They have that mental approach to every game. And right now I don't see that with OG, and that's why he's just another, as of right now, I'm not saying he can never be, but it's hard to instill that in somebody's mindset to be like, you know?
Although he's having a good game tonight too.
He is. He's hitting his open shots, but the previous four or five games.
Yeah, he didn't do anything. Yeah.
Nothing. He got 0 points last game, I think, and four the other night.
Yeah. No, I get it. And I just to move on really quickly, I know I said, Randall, that you kind of broke into one of my questions that I was going to ask, but I know you've changed your mind on Nick Nurse, but like, how has that changed for you? Like, forget winning the title and all that. I know you're now on board with him, but what made you change about his coaching style? Like in terms of like now being a fan and being like a like leader of his fan club.
Well, you know what I noticed is he's always like initially last year when I was watching him, I think he was experimenting a lot, which pissed me off, right? I think initially he was playing it safe, like the bag, like his coaching style was like, remember we were all like, well, what's the difference between him and
Casey?
And Casey, I'm like, you got rid of Casey. Never even Casey's like, he's running my same plays. Of course I can beat him. So I think he was kind of like working his style in and then experimenting a lot, doing different things, which would piss me off. But what I realized in the, like, it was the playoff time with his adjustments and his game plans at the beginning of this season, like when everyone was injured, like, Casey's known to be an offensive coach, right? So I've seen some improvements on the offense. But what really was crazy is the defensive schemes. Like, what are they ranked now? Like, third in defense in all the NBA or something
second,
crazy?
Second in defensive, like,
Second
in defensive rating.
And you know what? It was funny because when they were getting all those offseason signings, you could tell that the mindset just shifted to more of a defensive stance, and you're seeing it. Right? They say defense wins games, and we're seeing it. We're seeing all these guys playing like dogs. The culture, they're like, pound the rock crap. These guys are smashing the rock, man. And they're bought in. You can just see it.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, Julian?
That for me, like, I've always been a fan. Like, meaning always, not when he was assistant coach, like when he became a coach.
Became a coach,
I told you, like that first example, like I think when he, his very first 2 weeks on the job, like the NBA season, he said he's going to start Siakam. And I think it was like the starting lineup was Valanciunas and Siakam. And he had to tell Ibaka, you're coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And then he said, I'm going to like, depending on matchups, I will alternate and see, you know, who starts. And he put Siakam in that starting lineup. And from right there, I said, you know what? I like him because he's not afraid to come out the box and try mm-hmm. something new mm-hmm. and whatnot. And the things that he was doing was successful. It was working well.
Yeah.
They were winning games. And I just like that, how I liked how he distributed the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I like his rotation. Yeah. I just like, I like everything, everything. And not to mention all the defensive schemes that we saw at the end of the year and this year. But yeah, I liked everything. You know, I'm not a Dwayne Casey fan at all. Like mm-hmm. I know some people are or not. Like I liked him as a coach and as a person. Sorry, mm-hmm. not as a coach, as a person.
As a person, and as a team, great human, you know? Being. Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. But not as a coach. Definitely not, man. Definitely not. So, but Nurse, I like how he's growing, developing the players. Man, you cannot deny how great of a coach that he is. And every other coach is following him. His game plans and his defensive schemes and full court press, boxing ones, zones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he mixes it up.
He reminds me of, like, I always say, you know, the rappers having like a major impact, and on the game is when like other people are copying their sound. Mm-hmm. You know, when other people are not even just like lyrics and stuff, but when some people are copying like just the way the record sounds, you're like, yeah, like you can see right now they're at the top of the game, or they have major influence and impact, and you kind of seen that with Nick Nurse. I thought, honestly, from jump, I kind of liked, even though, you know, he didn't, you know, he had the job, but, like, he didn't start his job just yet. But when Kawhi Leonard came into Toronto, and the fact that they were sitting there breaking down, like, X's and O's and how he'd be used, and it was, like, sparking Kawhi's interest right away, I was like, I thought that was a good sign, number one. I personally love how we started this season protecting the culture. In terms of, and you guys, we talked about this in terms of, you know, keeping guys a task, you know, like when he came out and he was calling guys out, like by name, calling out Stanley Johnson, especially calling out like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, which kind of threw me off because I'm like, Rondae is a guy he's a hustle player. That's all he does. That's where he makes his money, working hard. I'm like, he's not working hard. You know, but I'm like, you know what? I kind of like how Nick Nurse is carrying this because he has that confidence. Yo, we're a champion. And we got a chip on our shoulder. People don't believe in us. We don't have time, you know, to baby and manage your egos. And if you're not following rank, like you're going to get left by the wayside if you don't catch up. And to his credit, RHJ has done just that. He's basically, you know, he's come along with the program. But I think at the same time, too, like he's clearly earned the players' trust and everybody's bought in since winning a title. And, you know, as we're talking about, like they've ran incredible, you know, play sets. They've ran unconventional schemes. Like, you know, like, how many NBA teams have you seen run a full court press successfully? You know, like, you almost never see that in the NBA. That stuff is like in high school, maybe college. That's it. That doesn't carry over to the league. And the fact that he's used it, like, for example, against the Mavericks, that's how they came back from the 30-point lead, you know, and when won that game. Like, just the fact that they're even doing things like that, he's not afraid to throw even the simple schemes out there just to throw guys off. You know, I think right now I would honestly say Nick Nurse is a top five coach. I put him behind Pops, Coach Spo, Rick Carlisle, Doc Rivers. I put him in a tie with Brad Stevens, but I'll give him the nod because he's got that ring. Like I strongly put him as a favorite for Coach of the Year.
You got shit.
Yeah,
he got a chip. He right now he's in the forefront, and on top of all that, what you said is, yo, the true measure of a coach in a system is when you can get bench players to come in and it's seamless. Like he's getting guys like no one knows. Like, who knows Boucher? Who knows what's his name? Davis. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Look at Norman Powell. Like resurrected his game. Every person that comes into that, you know, is bought into playing and bought into playing a certain way.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Johnson, he called him out, like you said, and yo, you're not playing for me because you don't know how to play basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was going to tag on to that, like saying that how he's able to get like reserve players to buy in. I think last year, when in the playoffs, when they were able to get through the Bucks, and Kawhi was getting all the credit, actually, for like limiting Giannis and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think Kawhi took away a bit of Nurse's shine in terms of how he was able to get the entire team to play defense on Giannis. And I think now that Kawhi's gone, we can really see that this is really the system that Nurse has put in place that is winning games and getting turnovers and defensive rebounds and leading into transition and whatnot. So I think Nurse is going to get the credit now this year without Kawhi,
mm-hmm.
kind of like getting that kind of like popularity, not vote, but people know who Kawhi is as defensive specialist and whatnot. He was getting a lot of the credit. And I really think in the playoffs, in offensively, Kawhi was really more so where he showed his dominance than he did on the defensive end last year. He had a couple of key stops, but throughout the entire games, I thought it was a team defensive approach that won them the games.
Yeah, and I hate to keep comparing them to the 94 Bulls, but like if you look at that situation with Phil Jackson now, like that was Phil Jackson's that's one of his best coaching jobs in his whole career, because he joined that team and it was all Jordan and the Jordanaires. He got Jordan to kind of commit and stay within the structure of the offense and the structure of the team while still being Jordan. And made guys like Pippen and Horace Grant and everybody else better. But when Jordan retired the first time, you know, as I said before, like everybody thought for sure these guys are done, you know what I mean, and everything else. And that was one of his best coaching jobs ever. I think if memory serves me correctly, I think he won Coach of the Year that year. And it's probably one of the only times he won it, if he did that year, because of the job that he did. Like this is kind of like a similar case. There were different points in the career, of course, because Phil Jackson had 3 rings, but it's the way that he kind of got the players to unite, you know what I mean? That I thought was like, that's really critical and key as well. You know, I think, like I said, I think Nurse he's been amazing as a coach this year. Like to me, he's a absurdly strong favorite to be coach of the year. Like I don't even know if it's close, to be honest.
And you know what? Hats off to Masai for taking that risk and chance of making him coach. When I won't lie, when they said they let go Casey, I'm like, good, 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 fucking good. Finally, we can get a real coach and blah, blah, blah. And then when he said Nurse, I go, Nurse? Oh, my gosh. Because I didn't even know much of him, right? So I was like, Nurse?
You thought it was going to be like
a team
the same that's offense
on the brink of making it to like the conference finals or even to the championship finals. And you're bringing in Nurse? Oh, I was livid. I won't lie. But then again, Masai, again, he knows best. So hats off to Masai for passing the reins off to Nurse and leading us to the championship.
And Masai we trust, and Masai we trust.
Yo, you know what, man? I couldn't have said it better, man, because Masai is a genius, man. It's either he's a genius or he got a horseshoe up his ass. It's one of the two. Hey man, it's one of the two, man. It's either he's a genius or he got it, because some of the moves he made, I don't think he even knew that. Like that, it all started with the Rudy Gay trade. Well, it started with Bargnani, started Rudy Gay.
Oh yeah,
like you know, and then it just like you know, he was supposed to get rid of Larry, he didn't. Everything that he's done, it's like, wow, like he took the ballsy chance to get, you know, that's a ballsy move to trade a cornerstone of the franchise in your boy DeRozan. We all love DeRozan, but when he left, and we're all like, oh, man, it's sad to see him go, but how the fuck did he get Kawhi? Even for a one-year rental, which is a loan for a chip, I would do that every day, all day, and he's still winning.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know what? To be a genius, sometimes you got to be a little bit lucky too, right?
You got to be a little bit lucky.
You have to be sometimes too. Because as you said, he was going to blow up that team for, you know, in 2014. And then, you know, Lowry and them got hot, especially after that Gay trade. They got hot. And then it's the whole We the North thing. You remember they had the We the North campaign. They had to kick it in about a year or two early. They weren't ready to do that yet in 2014. They had to kick that in early because everything just kind of took off. Everything he's done from the fuck Brooklyn to even things like picking up like Corey Joseph, you know what I mean? Like picking up Corey Joseph where a lot of people weren't, you know, they thought he was going to be pretty good. He ended up playing great for the Raptors. Like people weren't sure how it was going to be because he was like an 11th. He was like the third guard on San Antonio. And all of a sudden he's playing solid backup minutes and playing amazing on both ends of the floor. Like people didn't, not everybody saw that coming either. You know, and now I know like the Knicks came calling for Masai Ujiri. You know, at least that's what the rumors say. Yeah. You know, they wanted Masai to become the president of basketball operations for their squad and bring the Knicks right, bring the Knicks back to relevancy. But obviously, they went a different route. So now that that's over, how do you guys feel about Masai in terms of staying long term? And I ask this because apparently he can address his status as soon as next season or next summer.
Yeah, like, I don't think none of us can answer what holds in the future for Masai, especially because he's going to be the most sought after. There's going to be money thrown at him. You know, I really don't know. Obviously, I hope he stays. I hope we have a winning product on the floor for him to, you know, be proud of and to want to stay up here. I know he loves Canada.
Mm-hmm, really does.
I know he loves Toronto, you know, and the people and whatnot, but it's really hard to say. Like, I really thought there's no way he's going anywhere because we're a winning team and we're going to give him whatever he wants, right? Tannenbaum, we're going to give him whatever he wants. And it's a winning organization with young studs. It's not like a winning organization with one or two more years left and it's an aging team. We got Siakam, we got Van Vliet, and we got like, you know, well, Van Vliet's a free agent, but you know what I'm saying, right? So I didn't think anybody would want to leave that situation. But who knows, man? Like, who knows? Somebody could just throw him money. You know, money talks at the end of the day. Money always talks and wins. So, for the most part. So, I don't know. I hope he stays. But if you want me to decide right now, I say he stays.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Randall?
You don't know what the future holds. I kind of agree with Julian. At the same time, I think he's had opportunities to go before. And I think that he wants his destiny to align with Toronto. I think him, you know, I think there's you know, what did Tannenbaum say? That he goes, anything Masai wants, he gets, basically. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think there's kickers in his deal we don't know of. I think that he's, you know, I don't know if his daughter was born in Toronto, was she?
I'm not sure.
His kids?
No.
But I think his kids are born and raised in Toronto. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's a staple of the city. I think, you know, sooner or later, I'll be honest, he might even just take over all operations for sports. Just here, he's gonna be the first to have a statue outside of what do you call it now, Scotiabank?
Yeah, I think he should. I think he should. Cool. I would. I'd give it to him. Shoot.
Yeah, man, he could run for mayor. Like, honestly, he has that much of an impact, not only, again, just not on the team, but just on the city itself of Toronto. Like, he comes out and he's doing public appearances, he's at charities, and, you know, his whole Nelson Mandela Foundation and whatnot. Like, he is
Africa,
revered by not just basketball fans, just the citizens respect him. And, like, so he can be a permanent fixture in this community, in this country. For generations, if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. You know, here's the thing I didn't mention. Michael Grange had a couple of articles this week. You guys should go check it out after listening to this podcast, of course. He wrote two good articles this week, really good articles, about the state of, like, Masai and everything else that was happening with New York. And here's the thing I didn't mention. His entire staff, including Bobby Webster and the director of sports science, Alex McKechnie, all their contracts expire when Ujiri does in 2021. So the potential is there where they can all bounce with them or just go their separate ways whenever he decides to go next, which will absolutely take away from the foundation of the most successful period in the history of the team. I think he's going to stay, but it's interesting the fact that, you know, he kind of wants to test the market too. Like, he's not looking to sign an extension or anything like that. I mean, who knows what's going to happen this summer now? I mean, he might change his mind and just, you know, sign that blank check and just put whatever is whatever he wants to put on that check and just go on his merry way and just keep, you know, doing his thing for the Raptors. But, you know, when somebody wants to test the market, man, you never know. You don't know what situations may open up by 2021. And then the thinking is, some people are thinking that, like, wherever he goes, Giannis is going to follow. You know, so mm-hmm. I think that's like the interesting caveat with Ujiri. But go on, Randall, before I make my point.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that come into play. Personally, for me, I don't think Giannis is going anywhere. I think he's staying with the Bucks. That's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. I don't think so. The Knicks, didn't they just sign a president?
Well, I think they're about to. Okay. As of this recording, they were like looking to sign Leon Rose,
player agent. I thought the deal was done. Yeah. But if Masai was going to go anywhere, I think the next challenge that he would have, and you hear so many rumors, would be for a mega market, so that he could, you know, something like the Knicks to bring them to relevance. That's just on a grand scale of things. So mm-hmm. like that's how big Masai could be. But I'll be honest, I don't know if he's going to take that challenge. Like I personally think that wherever Giannis goes and all that, I don't think that really that makes a difference. I think his thing is more of like, what legacy is he going to leave? It's almost like a basketball player, right? Because he was one. You know, if he's really competitive, he might have said, "Hey, I've done what I got to do here. I want to see if I can do it." Like LeBron did. Hey, I left Cleveland. I won some chips. I know how to do it. Now I'm going back to Cleveland to win it. I could see him saying, "Hey, I won in Toronto. No one believed I could do it. I did it. I brought the chip here. I have created a winning culture since I started. I'm going to go now to New York, which is a shit market, but a mecca of basketball. And I'm going to turn this shit around again." Mm-hmm. I could see him doing it, or trying to do it at least.
Now with the Knicks, it's interesting because, you know, I mean, I don't know what how Leon Rose is going to do if he ends up going there, but the interesting thing is he may bring Worldwide West with him. And if, you know, any basketball junkie knows, Worldwide West is like a major player broker, you know, behind the scenes in the NBA. So having him on your roster, I mean, I think they actually might be, for the first time in God knows how long, they actually might be in a pretty good place in terms of setting a culture and signing free agents and stuff. It might be interesting. Again, this is the Knicks. This is Dolan. So who knows? But, and I think that's another reason why you know, you're not 100% sure you want to take yourself down to New York City, where you're putting your future in hands in an owner that's so wishy-washy, you know, that's for lack of better words. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's almost schizo in terms of how he makes his decisions. I don't know if you want to put your future in the hands of somebody that can just one day be like, you know what? I don't want you talking to the media for the rest of your life. Actually, you know what? You're fired. You know, like he can go that fast. Like it's just weird. Like he can leave you alone and then just come and just fuck up everything that you're doing. You know what I mean? With comments, just with, you know, like meddling. Like we've seen it so many times the last two decades. So, you know, I don't know. Like I still think, like, if Dolan sells his team, he's gonna get at least $4.5 billion for that team. And that team will probably, whoever owns that team after Dolan, if he ever decides to sell the team, is gonna be, they're gonna make that money back. Because just running the team in a competent manner is gonna be worth so much more in New York City. Seriously,
a competent manner. Yeah, no, you're right. No.
Seriously, you know, like I think easily $4.5 billion he can get for that team the day he decides to sell. How much people will try to buy the Knicks if they could? It would be insane. But with Ujiri, you know, listen, man, that man has. I mean, genius. I don't even know if it's really the word. Because I'm looking at, like, the whole culture from top to bottom, from the roster to – sorry, from the varsity roster to the 905, and how they've all kind of had a seamless transition with each other in terms of players, some of the players playing, you know, in the day and then coming to, you know, to play with the Raptors at night. The fact that they're so close to each other, they're not in a different city. Like, I remember me and you were talking around, I think maybe about a couple of weeks ago, we're saying, like, Miami's probably the closest to the Raptors in terms of player development. And running their G League team like an actual farm team. But they're in Sioux Falls. They're like thousands of miles away, you know what I mean, from each other. The 905 is literally like, what is it, 35, 40 kilometers away, if it's even that much, you know, from where they are. So, like, you're just, yeah, you're constantly around each other. Like, you know, like, it, and everything that's being set, like, you know, like, yeah, your dream is literally, like, 35 kilometers away. You know what I mean? Like, if you keep working hard, if you keep doing this, so it's, everything's just kind of set on its own. Like, it just runs itself at this point now. And, yeah, you know, as you said, like the hiring of Nurse, the way the whole G League thing is coming to play, even the Giants of Africa and being able to recruit and see some of these African talented basketball players first, I think, even because, yeah, even somebody like Siakam, like, nobody was really paying attention to Siakam like that, you know what I mean? He saw something, mm-hmm, in him. So it's like you have a pipeline, and that's kind of like the next frontier for the NBA is tackling Africa. Like, you know, there's an African NBA league that's going to be starting in a few years. And, like, you know, you have a guy like Ujiri that's basically knowing the ins and outs of it already. You know, I don't think he's going to go anywhere personally, because I think Tannenbaum and I forgot the guy's name. There's the CEO of Bell, that those are like his two biggest supporters, and they love him to death. But I wish I could remember his name right now. His name escapes me. But the CEO of Bell, I think he stepped down. So I don't know what the new CEO was going to do when he comes in place of the old CEO. Like, when he comes in place, I don't know what his mentality is going to be like. And then I know Grange was mentioning too that, like, the age of Tannenbaum being that he's like 75 years old, even though he's in great health, who knows, right? Who knows in this situation and times, like, how his health is going to sustain over the long term. That stuff kind of comes into play when you're trying to sign a long-term contract too. But with that said, I mean, it couldn't have gone any better for Masai when he came from Denver, you know, like 6, 7, 8 years ago. Like, you can't paint a better story. You know what I mean? It's just gradually improved. Sorry to mention this name, Julian, like DeRozan. It's every year it's steadily improved.
Sorry, it's ahead. a great analogy.
Mm-hmm. So I have a few other questions here, and then we'll wrap up. What has been the thing that surprised you guys the most this season in terms of the Raptors season so far?
Oh, come on, man, that's easy. Like, the fact that they're number two. There's so many things that fall into play. Number one, the fact that they're currently number two in the Eastern Conference. Number two, the fact that they're on a 13-game winning streak. Number three, the fact that they have a better record at this point than they did last year with a championship team, mm-hmm, with Kawhi. Number four, the fact that they have, you know, the emergence of Pascal Siakam, who stepped in to be the new, you know, the new it guy for the, you know, the franchise tag for the team, and is, you know, NBA starter in the All-Star game. The fact that Lowry's back for the sixth time, and this time, you know, there's no controversy. He deserves to be in there.
Absolutely.
The fact that they have the record that they have with, you know, with all those guys that are, you know, have, like, the most of their marquee players or rotational players, let's say, have been injured for, I won't say long term, but, you know, let's say for a little bit, and they've had the emergence of guys come, like, their bench stepping up and playing starter minutes and really holding the fourth down. You know, the fact that Nick Nurse is emerging as one of the best coaches, like you said, in the league. There's, like, I could go on and on and on and on. It's like, the fact that they're, you know, I'm down here in Maryland right now, and they're playing more Raptor every time I'm down in the U.S., which is almost twice a month. They're playing Raptor games on ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. And like, people are sitting down in restaurants like, yo, leave it at that game. I don't want to watch, you know, Washington. I don't want to watch these guys. And people are talking about, yo, the Raptors are killing it. And on ESPN, they're actually now giving credit. They're like, almost like they're eating their words and saying, man, these guys can make another run to the championship. Like, I'm watching it, and I'm like sitting there, and I'm like, normally when they talk about Raptors, I'm like, here it comes. And it's like, no, they're like defending the Raptors. Like, you know, I'm not going to eat my words anymore, because every time I talk about the Raptors, it's like, I feel like stupid because they play back replays and I said that. Yeah. So I'm just going with the Raptors winning.
Damn, you took all of Julian's points.
Yeah, man, I can't follow that. That's just bang on. The only thing I will say is probably, like, specific players, like Powell's development this year being more consistent. Terrence Davis coming out of nowhere surprised me. Even Fred VanVleet, the way he's playing, he could have been an all-star too, I think.
Yeah, he could have.
Potentially, right?
He could have.
So, like, yeah, everything that Randall said and just going on just specific players, VanVleet, Powell, and Terrence Davis really, really surprised me.
Yeah, I think I've been inspired by their chip on their shoulder mentality that they've had all season. Like the fact that that's been strongly consistent the whole year, and how they've probably defended themselves as being a champion. Like, and they've been of one mind with it. Like all the way down to 15, as you mentioned, Julian, before. Like every reserve that comes off the bench is playing his role to the best of his ability. You know what I mean? And it's like every guy is coming in and playing their ass off. Like, I think that to me has been amazing. It's kind of surprising to me. Like, they haven't had any letdowns. And even in the games that they lose, like that mentality and that composure is still going throughout the game, even if they lose. And yeah. I think the other answer for me, honestly, is Serge Ibaka. The way he's played, like, this season, he's been amazing. Like, he rode that wave from the finals through the offseason into this season. I think it actually improved him this season. He's been so ready from day one. And sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, I think he's putting up career numbers.
Yeah, or if not, really close to it. Like, I think he's been ready from day one. I think it's been amazing to watch him and Lowry kind of, like, proudly defend this NBA title. Out of all the players, you can see it all over them. Like, you feel like they're willing to give up a limb, like, before they give up a trophy. You know what I mean? Like he's looking at the stats here. He's averaging 16-8. 52% from the field, 39% from the three. He's shooting 75% from the line. Like, 2 years ago, I thought you had to take him to the back of the barn and shoot him. Like,
yep.
I really thought that was going to be the case. Like, to see this, it's like I don't understand it, man. It's like I don't understand it. It's almost like he's leading the Kentucky Derby again. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, it's been amazing. And then on top of that, his star turn too, with his couple of shows, you know, like the How Hungry Are You has been making noise. That Avec Class one has gone viral. Like, that whole scarf argument has gone viral. Like, that's a hilarious conversation. I still haven't even watched the episode yet, but just watching that little clip of him and OG arguing back and forth, like, yeah, his star turn is, like, everything about him has been crazy. Like, I fully support it.
He's a great team guy too, it seems. Like, mm-hmm. It seems like a lot of the players, you know, look up to him and, like, kind of, like, follow his lead. And he doesn't seem like a guy that yells. Like, he used to be that hothead. I don't know if you remember.
In his first three, four years,
he was, like, a knucklehead type of rookie, like, or a sophomore type player. But I think he really, like, toned it down over the years, and he grew, you know, in that process. So, yeah, you're right. That's a nice – yeah, go ahead.
Do you think, Julian, he's going to stay around? Or come?
I think so. I think he loves the city almost as much as Ujiri.
Yeah, you think that Ujiri will sign after this year? I think so.
I don't know if that's going to be part of your question, Eric Calvin.
No, it wasn't. Wasn't.
Yeah. I think going into next year, I think personally, you re-sign Ibaka. What is he, 30 years old now? 31? Whatever, 30, 31. I think you re-sign him for 3 years. Right, or give him 1 year, like at $30 million, like kind of like what they did with Lowry. I don't think he'll take it. I think he wants long term because this is going to be his last contract or last big contract. But I think you re-up him, and you try to re-up Lowry, and you let Gasol go. Unfortunately,
yeah, it's I don't know what you sign him to. But yeah, I think you definitely have to re-sign him back. Like, I don't think he's going to command like $20-something million, but. But you got to give him something. Ibaka per year, like right now he's.
Well, he's making $24 million now.
Right.
Right. So I don't see him making anything more than that. That's for sure.
No.
Right. Even with career numbers, but that's what I'm saying. I will give him the same money he has now, kind of like what they did with Lowry. Give him the same money he has right now for like 2 years. You know, like a 1 year player option.
Yeah.
He wants to take it or opt out, whatever. Mm. And he might do that for that kind of money because I don't see him getting that kind of money in free agency. And you know what's kind of hurt him is that whole Drummond thing. Like, it just, no. Drummond got traded for a bag of nobody.
A bag of beans.
No, and I don't think that hurts him, Julian. Cause he
what? You don't think the big man? Do you see what happened in Houston? What they're doing in Houston now? Hold on, I'm just saying, I'm just saying about the big man. I'm just saying
he could stretch the floor a little bit, right?
And he's more of a power forward, really and truly.
And he's more of a power forward.
Are you gonna pay him? Are you gonna pay your big man that can stretch the floor $25 million? Like, I don't care who you are, that can do that. I don't think you give that amount of money from your cap to that big man like that anymore. Personally, you're right though. You're right. He will be in demand, but because you want that five that can do that. But are you willing to give him that kind of money in a long-term contract?
I think it helps us if we want to re-sign Gasol for a minimum. But I personally think, like, with the deal anyway, regardless, I think, like, and you said something earlier that kind of made me think. I think one of the big things right now is that Jerry aligns himself with everyone's contract. So it's almost like the team at 2021 is in limbo. Like the direction of the team is kind of predicated on what happens next season.
Yeah, but ideally that would be the case. But guys like Ibaka, who's 30 or 31 years old, he's not going to want a 1-year deal, 2-year deal to align with the side. He's going to want like a 5-year deal that goes just like what Gasol has. Like Gasol, how old is he now? He's 36.
Yeah, he's whatever contract.
I don't know when he signed that contract, but I assume he signed it like around Ibaka's age, around 30 years old, 31. He got a 5-year deal that takes him to 36. I think Ibaka is going to want the same thing, a long-term deal that runs him into the ground and retires, and he won't want to take that 1-2-year deal that aligns himself with Masai or Giannis or that, you know. So if you're a player, you got to get your money, right? So he might leave. He might go, but it'll be interesting to see what a big man like Ibaka that can spread the floor, okay, he's a great 3-point shooter this year, how much they will get now on the open market. It'd be interesting.
I think it's I think it's also disgusting what's happening to the big men now, like this year. I'm actually disgusted by it. And honestly, really and truly, F the analytics, watching Houston, I only watched a quarter of that Houston game. I know they won. But Julian, I was so mad watching them play against the Lakers. Like it actually pissed me off. You know, so the fact that they won, I think it's actually the service that they won. And right now they're getting killed by Phoenix. So
Yeah.
But
there's no Westbrook. I don't think Westbrook is playing tonight. But yeah.
But my point is, like, even watching those games, like, they're driving in on Anthony Davis, and every time they take their 2 steps, they're like, "Huh!" And then having to kick it back outside. Like, I'm like, yo, this is so stupid. Don't tell me analytics is like this is the way to go. Like honestly,
It seems to be.
But I tell you,
that in a 4-game series.
No, of course not.
No, man. It won't.
Like,
won't,
no, like honestly, happen. any player, any big like 6'10" and up should be rooting against Houston to have any kind of success.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they should be rooting against them, because God forbid, I'm not saying this is going to happen. None of us believe this is going to happen. But if, God forbid, Houston won this championship, the NBA will be a 6-7 and under league. Because everybody will copycat. Yeah, everybody will copycat. It'll be real dumb. What is your favorite moments of the season so far? Like, in terms of games or player performance, anything like that you guys can think of off the top of your head?
Well, the Dallas comeback victory should be on everybody's head if you're a Raptor fan. Or, for those who are not Raptor fans, they came back from, I don't know, what was it, 30 points in the second half?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a highlight for me that stands out the most. And this current win streak, they set a Toronto City record, like Leafs, Blue Jays, Raptors. Yeah, the longest win streak in the city of Toronto, like
get
professional
out of
sports.
I thought it was the Raptors.
No, they won tonight. What is it? 13. Yeah. Longest winning streak
in Toronto sports history.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah. And Larry just moved to the third time all-scorer Huskins Carter today.
Yeah.
So he's behind Bosch and DeRozan, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Well, DeRozan is it Bosch or maybe Bosch? Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's
Bosch.
Bosch.
I don't know.
It's got to be Bosch. Yeah, it's got to be Bosch. Yeah, I can't argue with those. The only other thing I would add is I think the beatdown that they gave the Lakers while missing both Serge and Lowry, I thought was that really opened my eyes earlier this season. Like when I saw that, I was like, because I wasn't even watching because I heard the 2 inches. I was like, ah, I might go to bed early that night. And then I just happened to flash in the third quarter. And I was like, oh shit, what the hell? Whoa, yo, Boucher, oh shit. Like it was like that. Like I ended up going crazy watching the game. So I thought
that was great, yeah.
To me, I thought that was a great moment too. And especially
they had AD, and AD was playing, LeBron was playing. They had a whole healthy squad, yeah. And we didn't. Yeah, that was a great game, actually.
Like I think one of my favorite moments, the one that sticks out of my head, is I think LeBron got a rebound, and he went up and Siakam pelted that shit to half court. Oh, my God. Yo, but it was shocked me. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, yo, these guys are not playing. You know what I mean? Not just the fact that LeBron got blocked, but it's just how he did it. Like, he just came out of nowhere and just pelted that shit to half court. And they got a layup out of it. Yep. I was like, yo, these guys are not playing. Like, the way Terrence Davis has been playing, like, undrafted guy, like, it's been crazy, man.
He got robbed. He should have been in the Rising Star
game. Wow, man.
Absolutely.
It's weird how they have it set up.
At least
the world's...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it's just weird how they have it set up. Like, it's like, isn't it like how it's the world versus the U.S., right? Kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got players that are there, like, you know, Alexander Walker, who, you know, from Toronto or whatnot, but he's there, and Terrence Davis isn't. But he's there because, you know, there's a spot opening on the world's team, and he only plays like 5 minutes a game. It's just weird. Yeah. It's just a weird setup. They got to look at that again for next year.
At least he didn't go off like Jackson Hayes.
Oh my God. Man, somebody's like, the youth. Yeah, really comes out and it lets you look, because when you're watching them play, you tend to forget how young they are. Like these players, all of them, like 28, 20. You're seeing them superstars, and you just think like, shoot, they're like 30 or, you know, our age, mm-hmm. but they're only like 20, 21.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
It's like 19.
And when they start opening their mouth like on social media, then you realize, holy fuck,
yeah, these guys are babies.
Babies, man, saying bullshit that they don't realize what they're saying. So yeah, Jackson Hayes, I'm sure he's gonna look back at this and say, what the fuck was I doing? Yeah. Hopefully he looks back at it and says that.
Let's hope. So I got two more questions, then we'll get out of here. So in terms of talking about the NBA deadline that just passed yesterday, who won the trade between Minnesota and Golden State?
Well, I can go first. Yeah, Minnesota did.
You think Minnesota won the trade?
Yes, from Gold. They got D'Angelo. Yes, 100%. You think Golden State wins the trade with Wiggins in the first round pick?
Well, Minnesota's first round pick from this year?
It's protected, right? Like top. What is it?
Top three protected.
Even? No. Don't get me wrong. It's going to be a good pick, but I don't like anybody really coming out of this year's draft personally.
Yeah,
but. And I don't like Wiggins on that contract for another 4 years just to be a, not a reserve, but like a role player.
A third or fourth option. Yeah,
yeah, and he's going to have to play small forward, right? Because it's going to be Curry and Clay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally don't like it. You sound like if you like the Golden State, I should let you talk first. You explain to me why you like the Wiggins going to Golden State and thinking that they won the deal.
I'll tell you.
Randall, go first.
I like to trade. I like to trade. I think but I, who don't, wins I, don't, it? I wouldn't. Well, I'll be honest with you. I think any trade where the better player is in it wins the trade. Like that, so I think I agree with you that Mini wins, but I don't think it's a win like a huge victory. I don't think it's like a clear like, hey man, it's a big time like discrepancy. I think that, you know, they got a number one, you know, first round draft pick out of it, which is always a valuable asset. I don't care what the circumstances and what the draft is. You don't know, and we never know what gems are going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Two is that Wiggins will be a much better player in Golden State than in any other place he could have been. I think Toronto would have been a good fit, and I think Golden State. And I think that very similar to Andre Iguodala when he came in, I think he has the potential to be kind of what Iggy was.
I think he could be offensively, I think he could be a better version of Iguodala. I don't know about defensively, I think it's like 50-50 because reason why is just because I'm a big fan of D'Angelo Russell. And him, Towns, and all they need is Devin Booker to come and make that holy trinity.
they're going to be able to acquire somebody now. If those two are together, and say a Booker, whoever sees that they're going to be there, and they could be like a big three kind of thing, they have a better chance of landing another young superstar.
But I think,
for sure.
But I think they definitely, like, these next 30 or so games, I think, is going to be a testament to how that works. Like, if they're still shit in the bed like they are now, I don't know how much people are going to be running to Minnesota, at least not right away.
But it's going to be, like, I think they still will be shit in the bed. Like, because they don't have, they lost, like, Covington. They lost players.
Yeah, they lost players, Wiggins too. You're right.
Right? So it's going to be, it's a long term, it's like, it's not even long term. It's like a 2 to 3 year plan now. Mm-hmm. I would think. And isn't Russell signed for another, like, what did Golden State sign him to?
How many years was it?
So he's there for another 4 or 3 more years.
So
Minnesota has a player that's going to be there for another 3 more years with Towns. What more, when you're a city like Minnesota or Milwaukee or even Toronto, you got to trade for these type of guys. You got to trade your first round pick for players under contract for 3-4 years, because you can at least build something and acquire other players, or maybe other players might want to come, like sub players, like below all star players, to come fill those roles. But you have to do that. Minnesota wins this trade in my eyes, not hands down, but they win it for sure.
I think
Russell,
yeah, go ahead.
He played well in Brooklyn. You see how what they did in Brooklyn?
I told you, I'm a fan of him. But I think with Wiggins, though, like, you know, he's averaging 22 a game. He's having one of his best seasons. With that said, I know the team hasn't really gone anywhere, but I think, you know, everybody, the whole thing, and I remember you, Randall, you were saying it from time, is like the whole motor thing, right? Like, in terms of the passion as you want it. Like, we're gonna find out how much talent he has in terms of that aspect of his motor, like pulling all the talent out of him. We're gonna find out now in Golden State, because, you know, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, especially, as we all know, and Klay Thompson, them boys work. They also have a culture. You know, that culture now is championships. Like, this year is a gap year for them. But, you know, they're going to be coming with the whole bank, especially because they got potential. They got two lottery picks, potentially. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They could either do one of two things. They can either flip those two picks and get another quality player, or they can flip those pick or two picks, package it with Wiggins, and get another star, you know what I mean, to couple with the three of them. So they got options. But the thing is with Wiggins now, like, if they think they can get the most out of Wiggins' talent, like, there's still an upside there. Like, you're getting a hell of a player as, like, your third guy. Like, if you can get Wiggins to be your third or fourth best player and you're getting the most out of his talent, you're a championship team. Again.
But not at that cost. Like, at that, the amount he's getting paid, $95 million for another –
3 years?
Was it 5 more years or 3? I think it's 5 or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But not at that cost. You're right. If he's getting paid like power money, $10 million per year for that kind of talent or something like that, but not at a max. Is he a max? I don't know if he's max, but not at that cost. So, but you're right though. He's going to be going into an environment where he should have been from the beginning as a rookie. Yeah. An environment with a winning culture, vets that know how to win.
Know how to behave
themselves on and off the court kind of thing.
Carry themselves like superstars.
Yeah, because he needs that. You can just look at him and you can tell he doesn't have that personality to lead, to, you know, to exert dominance on the floor, on and off the court. He needs a group like Golden State.
Yeah.
And he will be a better player. And he will learn and become maybe somebody that we've always wanted him to become, you know? Yeah. But It's maybe a little too late, and because he has that money,
he's got that money, and he's been in the league 6 years now. Usually, you're kind of set in your ways by that point. Yeah. The average player, you know what I mean, and I think he's starting to kind of settle in his way. So I'm hoping that window kind of opens for him. I'm hoping that window kind of.
I hope
opens
so
for him.
Too. You know, I want him to do well. I want every Canadian baller to do well and continue to.
Is anybody threatened by Miami selection of Iggy or no?
Oh no, I'm not at all. But like, I do like the pickup for him. But he's 35, hasn't played all year. Mm-hmm. He's a great defensive player, and the same thing that we just talked about in Golden State, that kind of culture, winning attitude. It's great for those young guys because they got a lot of young guys there, right? Like Dunn, and
Duncan Robinson.
Yeah, Duncan Robinson. So they have a lot of young guys. So and they have a good enough team to go far this year.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't mind.
I like Jay Crowder too.
I was surprised that Memphis traded him, actually, to be honest with you.
It fits the
maybe
culture,
that knucklehead move he made. Maybe it was that move he made when Peyton threw him down to the floor. Maybe they was like, yo, let's get this guy away from Ja Morant. Let's deal about it. Yeah, that's a good move too. You're right, Randall. They did. That was a nice little piece for Miami.
He fits the culture in Miami for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Toughness and, yeah.
They got rid of all their knuckleheads.
Yeah,
they
did.
Raiders and, well, James Winslow Johnson. Wasn't a knucklehead, but, yeah, James Johnson's gone.
James Johnson.
Yeah, he was kind of like, yeah, not a guy that doesn't seem to be committed.
He was for a while. I don't know what happened, but he was for a while.
Yeah, the offseason, he came in overweight. And
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he just never really fit into the rotation since then.
Now, my here's my final question before we wrap up. Now, going forward, because I'm going to be continuing these Raptors playoff post-game podcasts, you know, after, if not every game, after like almost after every game, basically how I've been doing the last couple of years. So I'll ask you guys, how far do you guys see me going with that segment this year? Do you think it's going to end in the finals like it did last year? The Eastern Conference Finals, second round, first round? How far do you guys think I'm going to be putting those episodes out?
I think
conference finals.
yes, Bucks. I think we match up. Like, again, you know me, Calvin. I always look at matchups, man. I don't really look at records. Well, I do look at records, but the biggest factor for me is matchups. And I think we match up well against every team in the East, but the Bucks, kind of thing. Even against the Bucks, we do match up well.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can win a 7-game series, though, the way that they're playing.
Man. I think Nurse has the formula.
Right? So that's why I'm saying, like, for minimum Eastern Conference final, as Randall said. That's how far we're going to go. And I want to say this, too, put it on record. If we win, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised.
Yeah. So, Randall, yeah? And Nurse we trust?
Nurse we trust, man. I agree. I agree with Julia. I think that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they – I wouldn't be surprised if they make it to the championship.
No.
If they win the championship, I would be surprised.
Yes, agreed.
That would be the most shocking return to to university in June that we've... You know how much people just have a stunned look on their face? Like, we're back here again?
It'd be a better victory. It'd be a better celebration and victory because everybody wrote them off than Kawhi. And then Kawhi's legacy now gets watered down.
Yeah, a little bit. It does.
It would.
Because you just won a championship without him.
No, of course. So do you think? Okay, well, like that, I was gonna make another analogy, but forget it. Because I was gonna say that when the Oilers won the Stanley Cup without Wayne Gretzky, did it water down his legacy? But he won four times, and he was the greatest player of all time. So no, it can't water it down. Bad example. But I don't know.
But he was a rental, Calvin.
Of course, for sure. But I don't know because it's the first one, man. I don't know if he'll ever water it down to me because it's the first one, right?
I think this is more. This is special.
This will be very special if you win it without him.
Personally, for me, it'd be special.
Yeah, I think so too. And guaranteed, I'll have you guys back on for those episodes. For the post game podcast, you know, for sure, because that was a lot of fun last year. I was shocked that, you know, when we got into like the deep in the conference finals and in the finals, I'm like, every time I'm, you know, we're about to record, I'm like, fuck, I can't believe we're recording this in June. I did not expect this, you know.
So it might happen again.
Legitimately, like we're actually here at this point where it's gonna actually happen for real.
There's no teams that really scare me other than
Milwaukee.
In the East, the Bucks and Miami, maybe. That's it. Philly doesn't scare
me. I'm not even scared of Miami.
No, I'm a little bit. Nope.
I'm saying the Pacers and the Bucks.
I think the Pacers, Miami, and Boston. You're gonna face one of those three teams in the playoffs.
I'm not scared of Boston.
No, I'm not afraid of Boston either.
No, but it's going to be a tough series, though. Either
I think they're all going to be tough, to be honest. But I think we're all going to squeeze like six games, seven games. I think we're going to especially if you have home court, and especially if everybody's healthy, if Gasol's healthy. Mm-hmm. One thing, one last point is I wanted, like, if we were going to do anything in the trade deadline, I wanted another big man.
Yeah.
Because right now we have Ibaka. Gasol's hurt with a soft tissue hamstring injury again. Mm-hmm. And who knows if that's going to, you know, linger, flare up again, or yeah, in a deep playoffs too. Mm-hmm. Maybe they might bring in somebody on a bio or whatnot, but I really was hoping that they'll bring somebody in to as another third big man. Because yeah, Boucher is kind of like, he's kind of struggling a bit now. And another big man. So
although anyhow, I want him to see him play a little more of Boucher. I really like Boucher too. Montreal's open.
Yeah, yeah.
Him too. But I think in Taj Gibson might be a buyout player option. I think that he would actually be a pretty good pickup too.
It would be. Somebody like that.
Yeah, I think if he's willing to come here, that'd be amazing. On that note, fellas, yo, thank you, man, for doing the fourth annual State of the Raptors address, man.
Easy, man. No anytime, you know, talking Raptor ball is easy, man. No problem.
Yo, I got one last thing to say.
Go ahead.
And this is resonating with me. You know, I was watching The Breakfast Club, and it just popped in my head. Mm-hmm. You know, did you guys ever see the one with Birdman when he comes in?
Yeah.
As a Raptor fan, I want to say to all y'all listen to the podcast and down in the Raptors. Yo, man, put some respect on our name.
Yeah.
I gonna say no more.
All three, y'all.
All three, y'all. We're champs, so you got it.
Hey, so Julian, so sorry, last thing I want to say real quick. So I've been mentioning that, you know, even though I'm a fan of the city, and I want the Raptors to do well, I'm not officially a bandwagon fan. But for the first time in probably since the year 2001, because 2001, after Vince Carter missed that shot, I officially somersaulted off that bandwagon. Right.
Meaning that you weren't even on the wagon. You weren't even a fan. Nothing. Right.
No. Last year I became more of a fan because, you know, like the last few years I became more of a fan.
Just like everybody else did.
No,
go on.
No. Because you know I love Kawhi Leonard, so I was in for that. But for the first time in 19 years, I want to get the applications to officially be an official tattooed Raptors bandwagon guy. What do I have to do to fill in this application?
Listen, man, not accepted. There's too much, you got to get off.
It's too much red tape for you to
too
get
much red
for
tape
us, for Damn. Us to sign off on that. There's a committee that has to oversee it, and there's not a chance that it's going to go by. You're, approved by all of us.
You're telling me there's not a chance I can. I'm trying to explore the option. I'm not even saying I want in. I'm trying to explore the option. You're telling me.
You know why?
You can't even tell me what it takes for me to be part of this application.
It's good. No, you know what? Calvin, I don't think there is Calvin. Anything,
Calvin.
Because we don't like. Go ahead.
You know what it's like, Calvin? Calvin, you're like those people that ride the GO. You know those people that jump on the GO train. And when those guys come and say, let me see your ticket, you jump off the next stop. That's you. Oh, shit, he's coming. You jump off. Something happens, they jump off. I'm done.
Yeah, man, only here for the good times.
Randall, that's not true.
I was on the train when the wheels were squeaking and nobody wanted to come on. Sitting next to that person that's bad DO. You know, you're on the train, you're like, oh, man. You sit down in the last seat, and you're like, oh, man, now I'm staying with that bad D.O. or curry smell or whatever smell on you. I'm that guy.
Randall, that's not true because...
Julian was the guy standing up. Randall. Falling all over every time the train gets... you know what I mean?
Now, I totally disagree because if the conductor comes, I'm just going to sneak upstairs. Thank you all for tuning in to the latest episode of the AF Podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening to that one as much as we enjoyed discussing it. Special shout out goes out to Randall Walter and Julian, a.k.a. Jules the Commish, for coming on the AF and having a conversation about the state of the Raptors. Now, while I commend that, you know, you guys protected the bandwagon with vigor, I gotta say, I left that conversation extremely insulted that I can't even be afforded an application so that I can at least look it over. It's very discriminatory. And I know it's because I'm black. Yeah, I said it. But it's all good, though. It's all good. I got the coalitions on speed dial. I'm going to see y'all. Don't you worry. Especially you, Julian. I'm getting my application. Once again, thank you for tuning in. Please make sure you continue to rate and review the shows from South Sharav Radio. The shows are available wherever you listen to podcasts, including SouthSharav.com, where you can listen to and check out the entire catalog of past podcast shows. Once again, you can catch up on SouthSharav.com. That's SouthSharav.com. For Julian, a.k.a. Jules of Kamish, and Randall Walter, this is Cal C. And you just tuned in to the AF Podcast on South Sharav Radio. Until the next podcast, folks. Peace. We out.